Mun nimi on Joonas Korkan ja sä kuuntelet ProChat-podcastia.
So yeah, it's great to see you, great to meet you, great to actually be getting this conversation. And thanks for agreeing to it, because it's the new sort of project that we've been starting doing, the podcast. But let's just jump straight in.
Sure.
So what sort of products and services does your business offer, and what sort of why does it exist?
That's a good question. First of all, I would like to, you know, thank you for having this opportunity to tell my story and to promote and tell about my business. I've been following you guys for quite a while. I mean, I've seen your posts on LinkedIn, on social media in generally. I've seen your guests. They're really, really, really fantastic guests you've had. So it's an honor to be one of the guests. But yeah, going into my business, so we're basically, just to put it in a simple term, we're a software development agency. What we do is we do programming for our clients, mainly large programming projects, not like small WordPress sites or anything like that, but you know, those kinds of projects that require quite a lot of know-how, knowledge about your industry and whatnot. So yeah, I like to usually say it in a couple of words, like, hey, yeah, we do programming for our clients, and that of course includes everything for building integrations between different softwares, between different CRMs, ERPs. It depends on the client so much, you know. We do open source development for our clients. We do their own, you know, we develop their platforms, you know, so it's pretty much from quite various, you know, from side to side. But in a recent addition, we've had I think the exciting part about our company is that we have this typical roles who do marketing. For example, we have an art director, we do have a copywriter. We actually have two art directors and one copywriter, and you would probably see these roles in a typical agency that does marketing for clients. So we've had this, you know, I value marketing above everything else. I think marketing and building brand, and I like to call it, you know, doing propaganda for our business. You know, we're thinking that we're like a media business, not like a, you know, an IT business. So we have that approach to our business. So, and you know, because of that, we do have some, you know, some marketing services as well, but we don't promote that. More or less 95% of our income comes from different software development projects that, you know, that vary from size. I mean, we had a client from day one. I think we started 2018 in the middle of November. I still remember the date. It was 19th of November 2018. And then we had our first client, and we're still working with that client. So we have, you know, bigger clients, we have some smaller clients, and pretty much everything in between. I hope that was clear enough.
Absolutely. So I've obviously done a little bit of research and found out you sort of, similarly to me actually, I had a freelance social media thing going on for a while. But yeah, tell me a little bit more about that. Sort of how did that lead on, that you obviously mentioned with the marketing, which might give it away a bit, but how did you go from social media to software development? Because to some, yeah, that might seem quite the jump.
Yeah, that's actually quite an interesting story. So we probably should go back a bit to like year 2014, 2015. We were doing it was a school project back when me and my co-founder Sami Suaheikki were back in school. We had this one school project that we had to develop an application that identifies dyslexia, or like shows symptoms of dyslexia. So yeah, we did that, and we attended a kind of like a competition between the universities here in Turku. There was Åbo Akademi, Turku University of Applied Sciences, and of course University of Turku. So we kind of won that with the dyslexia web application thing. I mean, we managed to pitch it really well. And after that, we went to Boost Turku, which is a local accelerator here in Turku. We attended their accelerator program called Startup Journey with the same idea. And okay, so long story short, we won that as well with another team, and we won a pitch competition as well. So yeah, we developed that one first, but as it wasn't like our calling to develop, you know, that product. So after a couple of years, I think it was around 2017, we just dropped it. And during that time, I was following this one social media influencer called Ty Lopez. I mean, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, but quite a lot of people are. So I fell fully into his marketing, you could say. And I bought his social media marketing agency course. I think it was back in 2016, 2017. And I learned social media from that. And since I already had a company set up, I was like, I was on my summer vacation. I was like, hey, I want to learn a new skill. I'm going to go through that course and get me some clients. I was working a day job at Vardin that time. I was like, yeah, let's do that for, you know, because I paid for the course. I think it was 1,000 euros or something like that. I learned how to do social media. I mean, social media marketing was pretty much, you know, just starting back in 2016, 2017. That's hard to imagine right now, but it was like, it was such a beginning stage at that point. So I managed to, you know, get a couple of clients. I did that. I think I was earning like 1500 euros per month, like extra on top of my day job, which is kind of good, you know, but I stashed it all in my company. And during the same time, my co-founder, Sami Suaheki, who has been part of this journey as well, he did some freelance software development, you know, for his clients. So we just pulled the money into our company. We did go out to, you know, for a couple of drinks and you know, we ate some good food at some time, but we never took any salary or anything. And well, during that phase, you know, we watched quite, I always tell this as a joke, but it's truth. We watched quite a lot of motivational videos by Arnold Schwarzenegger, David Goggins, you know, these big shots, Ty Lopez, Grant Cardone, you name them, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk. We watched too many of those videos and we're like, hey, well, we've had some success, you know, and clients were like asking us, hey, can you do some bigger projects for us? And we're like, well, we kind of want to try this entrepreneurship thing out a bit, you know. I mean, we didn't have any kids, we didn't have any mortgages, you know, we were young. I mean, we're still young, but anyway, so it was like quite like a risk-free thing. So we decided we should go with software development since our background is more or less in IT. So that's like the short story, if you could say. So basically, it's just, you know, we did some things. I bought a course. We watched too many motivational videos. And we were like, hey, let's try this one out. Since we both had the ambition to try it out, and we would have regretted it had we not tried it out, you know, when we were old, if we didn't try it out. So we're like, hey, let's try it out for 1 year, for 2 years. But before we jump into, you know, full-time entrepreneurship, we managed to get a client that paid us really, really well. And we jumped, you know, to a full-time entrepreneurship when we had the big client. So I think, you know, the people talk about, you know, entrepreneurs getting, you know, taking huge risks or whatnot. But actually, we did not take any risk. We had a big client. We had stashed, you know, we did freelancing for almost 1.5 years. We didn't pay ourselves any salary. We just, you know, stashed the money there. So it was like completely risk-free. And even if we failed, you know, it was a no problem to get a job again. And, you know, our previous workplaces were like, hey, if it doesn't work out, you're always free to come back. So it was really not risk-free. We had been in that, you know, space for quite a while. The clients were asking us if we could do work for them. So I think it was just kind of like a no-brainer.
Wow. I mean, sounds like quite the dream scenario. Through no short hard work of your own to get there, obviously.
Yeah, of course. But we did have quite a lot of luck on our side. But yeah, but it was, of course, quite a lot of work as well, since we didn't have that much of, you know, of network or anything. I mean, we did have some because we were working for like 4 years in the IT industry, but you know, we're still young. We didn't know pretty much anyone. So we kind of had to grind it all out by ourselves.
I mean, it sounds like it was a relatively smooth sort of transition, but were there any difficulties, challenges? You know, there's obviously always some.
Yeah, right? Yeah, there was like some, of course. It's a whole different, it's a different story, I would say, you know, to run a business than being an employee. But we started out, you know, me and Sami, we hired one of our good friends almost immediately. So we did the company for like, I think it was for 6 months by the, like, just the three of us. And then we hired our first, you know, first outside of the friendship group, if you could say, an employee. I mean, of course, we've had some, well, not problems, but of course, you know, when you grow, there's certain things you have to learn. And this was my first time being a leader, actually. I've never quite, you know, I didn't see myself as a leader or anything like that. I've never led a team. I've never had, you know, people working for me. So that's been a huge, huge growth place for me. But I wouldn't say we had any big problems or anything like that. I would say we had challenges, you know, like where we want to take the company, how much do we pay our employees? We want to pay them really well, even though we are a small business. Okay, we have to bill certain amount, you know, we have to have the cash flow in place. I think those are the challenges we had, but like bigger problems, no. Challenges, sure. You know, sometimes employees say that, hey, you know, the XYZ is not working, so we're going to fix that, you know. So those kinds of challenges, yes, but problems, I would say no. Of course, we have soon 17 employees working, you know, for us. So that's been a huge, huge thing for me to learn, you know, how to lead a team, how to lead people.
Tell me a little bit more about that, because I feel like to some, leadership comes quite naturally and they quite enjoy it. Whereas it sounds like, yeah, it was quite a learning experience for that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, well, those who follow me on LinkedIn and other social media know that my principles for leadership or leading people comes pretty much from Gary Vaynerchuk. You know, his theses and his you know, his way of doing things. So I quite learned from him how to lead, actually. And then of course I just learned, you know, bought courses. I read quite a lot of books. And I was always hands-on, you know. So when you're constantly learning and when you have to do something, you quite actually well learn it, you know. I mean, I know that sounds silly, like, hey, when you study and you do something, you actually learn stuff. So that's basically been my thing. But I don't know, maybe it was just too much motivational videos that, you know, because from day one, I was like, okay, hey, if I'm the CEO, I have to be a leader, you know, at some point. So I think it kind of grew onto me, you know. I don't say I was a natural leader at any point. I think I just kind of grew into it, and I just studied people who I respected, and I just mirrored them. You know, of course, I do leadership in my own style, but I learned quite a lot from them.
I mean, that's quite an important trait, I would say, in a leader, the ability to know your weaknesses and know your strengths.
Yeah, and just to point out real quick, like where I've been working in IT quite a lot, and there's this the management style in IT is like there's no, you know, hierarchies or anything like that. Like everybody does their own thing, you know. Everybody has 110% trust immediately when they, you know, enter the company. So I just use those kinds of principles with my, like, when I hire somebody, I trust in 110%, you know. I pay them well. I trust them. I trust that they do the correct things. I trust that their intent is good. And you know what? It works. If you treat people well, if you trust them, they're going to do great work for you. Who would have guessed? You know?
Tell Amazon that.
Yeah.
I'll cut that bit out. That bit will be cut out. So already going on to the next sort of bit there with the sort of insights and things you've learned from coming to where you are now. Is leadership is would you say the biggest lesson you've learned, or is there sort of
yeah, definitely
something? Yeah,
I think it's leader. Like I kind of had to become a leader, you know, because I had this title of a CEO. I mean, we had to put somebody had to have the CEO title when you you know, make the company. So I was the unfortunate, however you want to see it.
I think it's a matter of opinion. I think some people would love it. But yeah.
If we check, like, 2018 November, we started. And by the end of year 2019, we had 7 people. Then 2020, we had 15 people. Soon we have 17 people. So that's been, and this has all been organic growth. Like, we didn't take any investments from anybody. Of course, we did actually give some shares of the company to our employees, but I think that's a different story in itself. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all been organic. No, we have no outside people in our board or anything like that. Like, we control it. Like, the founders control it. The employees control our company totally. But yeah, Sure. So the more people we had, like, I think I did a blog post about it as well. Like I said in the beginning of this interview, like, I didn't see myself as a leader, and I still kind of, you know, if I'm, I get this strange feeling when I say that I'm a leader, you know, it's kind of, oof, I shrug a bit because I still don't see it, you know, but that's been like a huge growth for me. And I kind of can't put it into words what kind of growth it was, but when you have a lot of people, you know, more people, different kind of people, I think I'm just a good listener and I react to things. I think that's it, you know, and I lead by example and I give trust to our employees. I trust them fully. I know that everybody has good intent. So, I mean, that's good enough for me. And if there's some problems, we react to it immediately. I mean, yeah, and that's pretty much it. I'm always accessible. They can come to me at any time. I don't think it's like stranger than that. Like it's pretty simple. We've kept it simple in our company and that's been working so far. But of course, say we double our growth when we're like 30, 34 or 40 people. Of course, I'm not sure. Am I going to be a good leader then? I don't know. Like I might be a good leader till we have 55 people, but when 56 people or when we are 60 or 70 or 100, that may break the camel's back and then I need a pro CEO in parentheses, you know, or somebody. But you don't know. Like I've learned so far and I think I'm positive enough that I'm going to learn it in the future as well. But yeah, I hope that answered your question in at least in some way.
Yeah. I mean, again, it seems to be sort of just ticking off all the questions I've got written down to be asking already. But
we can freestyle the other part.
Yeah. But with it seems like with challenges, the smaller ones that you faced, yeah, or with so the strategy you seem to be having is sort of honesty, openness, would you say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And responsibility, of course. Like everybody is responsible for their work. And well, like I said, like if you give 110% trust to your employees, you pay them well, you take good care of them, you give them, you know, like for example, we do have this career pass that, you know, okay, at this point I'm going to get a salary increase. And I say this quite a lot, I'm the most communistic capitalist because I like to give a lot to my employees. I think my employees deserve success. I mean, success in a materialistic way. Like I want to give them a lot of money. I want to give them a lot of opportunity. I want them to have the beachside property, to have the yachts, to have the Ferraris and Lamborghinis and Rolexes and whatnot. So yeah, I think I when I come from, you know, that place, I think quite a lot of things, and this is me humble bragging, you know, quite a lot of things fall into place, you know, because my intent is good. Of course, I want to have the financial and materialistic success as well, but that's not why I went into this journey. It was just something that I felt I had to do, you know.
So, as you say, it's sort of somewhat of an oddity to treat employees with such generosity. So why would you say that you do? Well, what's your personal motivation for, arguably, you could pay employees less even?
But. Yeah, but I think I learned this from Gary Vaynerchuk as well. I think he said he wrote in a book or said in a podcast or in a video, like the employees care, you know, as much as, you know, you pay them or how much equity you give them. For example, if there's somebody, like if you're an employee at a company, you can't expect him to care about the company as much as the founder who has like 50% of the company. Give him 50% and I bet he will care a lot more about the company, you know. So I'm coming from that place. And he said that, okay, always overpay a little, rather overpay a little, you know, so that they get a good feeling out of it. Of course, I don't know how well this is going to scale at, you know, when we're like 500, if we ever get to that scale. But I think, I mean, not to go too much into politics, but like I said, I'm the most communistic and capitalistic at the same time. I think that the employees are the ones who built the company. So I think it's just natural for them to get a piece of the pie as well. I think that's fair, you know? And of course, this is coming from a naive young entrepreneur who has not been in business more than a couple of years, and he has 1.2 million, you know, revenue company. So I can't say if this thing works, you know, at bigger scales. But hey, I'm here to try it out, you know. And of course, at some point, I might be paying, you know, market share, or you know, whatever they're paying. I might be just giving better opportunities to people, or what? I don't know. Like, we're gonna cross that chasm when we come to it. But so far, I strongly believe that everybody should get a piece of the pie, especially if the company is doing well.
So when you've been sort of growing, and as you said, you started at a certain level in 2019 and then jumped up a whole bunch to 2020, some might worry that growing too quickly could cause some issues, but would you say that you've just grown as needs demand, or?
Yeah, pretty much. I think the biggest turning point was when 2020, when the year started, we got a new shareholder into our company, Julius Rajala, who was a really experienced person with developing culture and how to take care of your developers. So we took him as one of the majority shareholders into our company. And I think that played a huge part in our growth, because he knows how to build a good culture. He knows how to build a good, since we do employ developers mostly, he knows how to build developer culture. He knows how to structure the payment systems, how to pay them, what kind of ladders for them. So he took care of all of that, So I think that played a huge part in our company's growth. And he of course, took quite a lot of responsibility for that. So in that sense, I think we grew actually quite slowish, you could say. And like I said, it's all been organic. Like, we always had the money to do it. We never have. I always take calculated risks. I always take risks that never take me out of business. That's my mantra. Those kinds of risks I take. Like, most people say that entrepreneurs are big risk takers. I say it's actually quite the opposite when you get to know, or if you become one. We're actually really, really risk averse. It's just there's this perception of, entrepreneurs taking risks, but I'm going to say, like, no, we don't take, of course, once in a while, somebody takes a huge risk, but most of the time entrepreneurs don't take huge risks. They take calculated risks. And if they fail, it's not a big deal. Like, I've taken a couple of risks, banking a developer for another project, then the project doesn't go through. Okay, no problem. Our developer didn't bill a client for like 1 month. That's not a big deal. We're still making quite good profits. We're still making good money. So, like, was that a risk or not? Like, yeah, in a sense, it was a risk, but it didn't affect the company. Of course, we lost some billings in that sense, but it was never a big risk,
So is that some advice you'd pass on to other people looking to become entrepreneurs? Take risks, but risks that won't put you out of business.
Yeah, exactly. That's the gist of it, to be honest. And while we are on this topic as well, I don't recommend everybody to become an entrepreneur, actually. It's hard. Like, of course, I've had sleepless nights. I've had, stress. Sometimes a bit more, sometimes less. Since, like I said, like, some projects go through, some don't. It's quite stressful in the end. Like, even though things are going very well for us, it's just natural that you worry about things all the time. But if you have this feeling that, hey, I could become an entrepreneur, then go, yeah, sure. Like, everybody should try out if they want to, but don't get fooled by Instagram, popping champagnes and Rolexes and Lamborghinis and Ferraris and private jets. I think that's BS, to be honest. Like, if you want to become an entrepreneur because of the money, I think you have the wrong motives. But that's just, my personal opinion. Mm. And we could probably argue about that as well.
And I think it's a very, very noble perspective to have, to be honest. And I'd say, I just lost my train of thought.
No worries, no worries.
Well, repeat the last bit back to me, because it was a really good question.
now I forgot what I said. Okay, not everybody should become an entrepreneur. You should only become an entrepreneur if you really feel, if you want to try it. For example, like I told my story, our story. We became entrepreneurs because we wanted to try it out, Not because we would have regretted it if we did not try it out. But of course, we didn't have any ego in it. If we failed, we would have been quite okay with, us getting bankrupt, us people talking behind our backs, like, hey, those guys, they didn't make it. They thought they were the hot stuff. My ego was perfectly fine with people talking, behind my back if I failed. So I think that's another tip for entrepreneurs. Like, just leave your ego aside if you fail. Or I mean, you have to come to terms with it if you fail, you know? Because if you're just banging it out on the social media, like, yeah, I'm the greatest entrepreneur ever, and then, you know, you don't succeed, it's a bad, you know, you might get depressed. There's some darker sides to entrepreneurship, you know, when people fail. Like, there's depression, there's anxiety, and all this kind of bad stuff, which they don't teach, you know, when people fail. Because most people see the 1%, you know, at the top, the Elon Musks, the Mark Zuckerbergs, the $10 billion evaluations and whatnot. But that's not the reality. That's like the 1% who do that. Most people fail. Most people don't even break, you know, I don't know the correct numbers, but like most businesses don't ever do more than 1 million a year. So even that's a big thing already to consider when you go into this. And it's extremely hard. Like I'm saying, like, we've had really good luck. I mean, we had some, you know, to humble brag, but we do have some natural talent for it, clearly, you know, because our, you know, the results speak for themselves to a certain point. It is really hard. Like, you have to sell. Like, that's most important. You have to market. How you're going to compete against bigger people, how you're going to deal with personnel problems. And then just, you know, the general anxiety of how things are going. You have to work longer hours, you know, your spouse, your significant other might not see you as much. It's hard. It's a hard job. You know, when they say it's lonely at the top, I'm starting to get it.
So is there any other advice, any sort of specifically maybe for software development and that sort of thing? Because get back to the marketing thing, I thought was quite interesting.
Yeah, sure, we can go back.
Yeah, yeah. It's quite interesting to say that, I would agree again, but marketing is sort of part of software development as well.
And we can go much more in depth in that in just a second, but just to give a tip, I always give this tip to all entrepreneurs, like, just sell, just get customers and sell. Don't care about value propositions or anything like building your company, just sell. Like, cash cures quite a lot of things, to be honest. It's much easier to deal with problems when you have cash in the bank. Quite a lot of people like say that, hey, validate your idea first, yada yada yada, but I think if you try to sell your stuff, your product, your service, that covers it all. I don't know if it's the best advice. I mean, that's how we started, you know. I'm always telling, like, hey, don't take my opinions or tips as absolute truth. It's just something that worked for me, for us, you know. This is not advice that works for everybody. It's just what worked for us. Like, we went sales heavy. We acquired the customers. We made sure we had the cash flow. So my, you know, general tip for all entrepreneurs is that, hey, just get your first client, get some cash into your bank account.
So which actually does lead on to it, which is, do you just think every entrepreneur should always focus how much percent on marketing, on getting those customers in, on getting
as much as humanly possible? That's the answer. Like, as much as your bank account or you know, it, of course, it depends on the context, like, what kind of a business are you running? For example, we are doing, like I said, okay, so last year we did almost 1 million turnover, you know. We're a small company. We had 15 people. Out of those 15 people, 3 people were in marketing. I see IT companies that have 100, 200, 500 people. They have 5 people in marketing or less. That's how much I value marketing. That's much how we value, you know, social media being at the forefront of this. Like today, just today morning, afternoon, sorry, not morning, we had a Clubhouse session. We're always, you know, checking what new social media things we can do. And that's the one reason, like, why I think we've been successful. Like, when I entered, I always joke with my friends that that IT, what we're doing, software development, is in parentheses, it's the easy mode entrepreneurship, we say, because the contracts are big. The money is good, to put it short. We have contracts that are supposed to run for 7 years, and the contracts pay us 20 to 30K, I know, a month, to 20,000, 30,000 a month. When you get a contract that's 20 to 30,000 a month for 7 years, I mean, you're quite set, right? You could say. So in that sense, IT entrepreneurship is easy, in my opinion. That's what we joke, at least. So yeah, like back to the marketing thing, like, we should be running more ads on different digital platforms, and we're doing that. But we have three full-time content creators creating content, doing the media thing. I think, you know, what you guys are doing at Entrepreneurs of Finland, we're striving to become that. Like I said, like we're becoming a publisher, a media agency, you know. So yeah, how much should you spend on marketing? As much as humanly possible, depending on your context, is my answer. And I don't even think we spend that much. I think we should spend 10 times more than we're spending right now.
I think I'd have to do the exact maths in my head, but I think half of our team at Entrepreneurs of Finland in total, the full team, is in marketing, to be fair. So yeah. I agree with you.
Yeah, yeah, but that's I think that's where this, you know, the world is heading. Like, how do you protect against anything? You build a great brand. That's all I'm focusing on right now. It's building a great brand. That's it. Of course, there's nuances to that. There's quite a lot of things, you know. You have to advertise so you get the clients. You know. I follow Gary Vaynerchuk in this as well. You jab or you right hook. Right hook is when you make an ad that says, "Hey, buy my software development services." Jabs are when we make a blog post about this talk, for example, or we make a blog post about one of our persons, or we make quote pictures out of things I've said and give that context. You know, that's jabbing, you know. And once in a while, when we have a free developer, I might throw a hard right, you know, and say that, hey, we have a developer right now, LinkedIn, I need your help, you know, give me some good contacts, and people usually come because we give them value. We do the long form content thing, you know.
Well, fair enough. Now for the slightly more, the you could argue, intimate part, the less sure. The less businessy stuff, the more personal things. And it's one which is always quite a revealing question, I feel, which is it's more sort of how is sort of the things you experience when you were a kid, sort of upbringing, parents, the lessons you learned, that sort of things. How would you say that those have influenced the person or the entrepreneur that you've become now?
Well, that's actually a good question. And I think my answer is kind of boring, to be honest. I would say not that much. Like, to be honest, like every mindset and thing, of course, my mother raised me really well. I mean, just to give a bit of context on my background, like both of my parents came from Soviet Union to Finland when it crashed. I think it was 91. I was born in Finland in 92. So just a bit later than the Soviet Union. So we were like immigrants, you know, to Finland. So of course that already gave me the, you know, the chip on the shoulder to, you know, because we didn't have that much, you know, when I was young, to be honest. Like, okay, I did have a roof over my head. We did have some food, but like, I didn't have any allowances. If I wanted, you know, something, I needed to buy it myself. You know, I needed, because like, this is one thing, like, so I know this wasn't legal at the time, and probably it's still not legal. It gets good when people start.
You know, you're onto a good story when they said this might not be legal.
Yeah,
you're onto something good there.
Yeah, so people know that. So of course, our family did visit Russia quite often, and they did bring some, you know, cigarettes from there. And like, when I was a young kid, I was selling cookies door to door. I was selling cigarettes to people, like. They were adults, you know. Of course, I didn't sell, like, I do have some morals. Like, I didn't sell cigarettes to young people. I was selling people, I just observed on my own, you know, home field, like, who smokes? And I'm like, hey, I have some smokes, like, wanna buy? And of course, when you get them from Russia, it's much cheaper. I can sell them, you know, much cheaper. So, I mean, yeah, that's how I started. But yeah, but like I said, quite a lot of things, like, I've been influenced by, you know, the social media, like the Gary Vaynerchuk, the Grant Cardones. And of course, I've read a lot of books. Like, if you can see the bookshelf behind me, that's just one part of the books I have, you know. I think it was like back in 2013 when I started this self-development journey, if you could say. But yeah, like I said, my mother raised me well. I had a good brother. They taught me good things. But more or less like this entrepreneurial leadership style, I just learned on myself or from other mentors, pretty much. Like, I had a really basic youth. Like, I didn't do anything special. I stopped selling cigarettes. I went to school. I got my, you know, degree. I played World of Warcraft. I was actually quite a big nerd, to be honest. Like, I was a huge nerd, to be honest. I was not a small, I was a big nerd.
Oh, no, exactly the same. I think I played World of Warcraft since about the age of 12, to be fair, so.
Yeah. It's a great game. Yeah, it's a great game. I mean, I always joke, you know, because the culture has shifted that these days it's quite cool to be good at video games. But when we were young, it was definitely not cool, you know. But back then, I was doing really well in World of Warcraft. I would have probably been the king, like the king alpha at school, if I was like, you know, right now, if I was the same gamer, dude. I was like, I was owning noobs. Yeah, I was owning noobs, you know. Like if you own noobs in Fortnite these days, you're like one of the cool kids, you know. Mm. It wasn't that 10-15 years ago.
I mean, well, yeah, it's a shame. It's a shame.
Yeah, it's a shame. But hey, we gotta work with what we have, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting you say that the childhood. I mean, maybe once you stopped selling the cigarettes, maybe after that, it didn't have much of an influence. But that's quite a measure of independence and quite a entrepreneurial thing to do.
Yeah, that's true.
At what age was it as well?
I think it was just preschool, actually, or like first grade or something. So that's actually a really good question. Like when I became an entrepreneur, I started, you know, thinking about these things. And I noticed that, hey, yeah, I did have some entrepreneurial tendencies, but it just, you know, came to me like one and a half years ago. And that's when we go back to my family history, our family history is actually quite interesting. Like from my father's side of the family, they were originally from like Sweden, Finnish, like on the border in the northern Finland. But they moved to America, I think it was in 1800s or something. But they had a small shop in there, you know, they went there. But the funny thing is that they migrated from US to Soviet Union. So they were one of those, you know, people who migrated from US to Soviet Union back in, you know, back in like 1930 or something. So, and of course, after that, you know, everything related to entrepreneurship and capitalism was like suffocated totally. So I think for me, those genes kind of, you know, grew up because they had a shop in US back in like the start of 1900s. So I think we've always had some entrepreneurial genes in our family history. And they just, you know, came to me now. And thank God I live in Finland, you know, in a capitalistic environment. Okay, some might say it's too socialist, but you know, the gist that I can create my own business, I can go after my dreams, and it's a free country, you know, in that sense. But in Soviet Union, no, business was a no, big no.
Yes, I actually did a lot of my undergraduate degree on socialism,
oh, cool.
And socialism,
yeah.
And communism and the Soviet Union, and
yeah.
Quite an interesting. I don't know how true this might be. Just as a personal question,
yeah.
Just out of curiosity, completely sure, unrelated
sure.
to this.
I'll yeah, probably yeah sure. Get go, cut ahead, as well. Go ahead.
I did my dissertation on the impact of environmental damage on the confidence in the Soviet Union, and was looking into how sort of the environmental movements and environmental criticism were really the only sort of like they were criticizing the government for damaging the environment, but the government didn't care because they were like, it's just the environment, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So just to ask you, have you any insight on that, just out of personal interest?
To be honest, like sorry, I have to disappoint you, like no, my parents never talked about that, or nor my grandparents.
That's fair. Yeah.
At any point, so I'm afraid I can't. I don't know how to answer.
No, that's cool. It's just out of just personal curiosity. It's just quite a.
Yeah, I mean, this is your show, so you can be selfish. No worries. That's always what I do in my podcast. Like at some point, if I get like an interesting question, I'm like, hey, this is my podcast. I can be a little selfish.
Yeah, I could do this. Okay. Yeah. Why not? Yeah. Anyway, back to it. You mentioned earlier that the your mantra or the motto, but just reiterate sort of not just obviously the words, but sort of how and why you came to that being so important to you.
Entrepreneurship.
The motto that you have of
I
The one you said earlier, which I have forgotten.
Oh yeah, yeah, the yeah, I know what you're talking about, but I forgot it as well.
I don't feel so bad now.
I know exactly what you're talking about, but I just can't find the words.
We've
right
been talking
now.
About so much, it's hard to talk remember what's going on.
Yeah. What did it relate to, dude? Like, give me some pointers.
It's on the tip of my tongue. Did I write it down? Was I clever enough to write it down? Risk.
Oh yeah, yeah, risk.
To take risk, but never risk big enough to. So, I feel like it might seem like common sense when you say it out loud.
Yeah.
But don't take risks. Take risks, but don't take risks out loud.
Yeah, take calculated risks. That was the way I put it.
Yeah, but how? Yeah, common sense when you say it out loud, but how? It's obviously something you've got to.
Yeah.
There's got to be a reason why you hold that so dearly.
Yeah, I mean, like, because when it comes to entrepreneurship, you have to, you know, in a capitalistic environment, in entrepreneurship, you kind of have to beat other people, you know. So to beat other people, you have to take risks, you know. So, and how you take those risks and what kind of risks, I think that's up to you. For example, of course, it was a huge risk hiring full-time in-house marketers to a company that's just started out. That's a risk, you know. But like I said, I ran the numbers. We were still making quite a hefty profit. And I think this was the, you know, the future of where everything should be going. And I had a co-founder that believed in me. He didn't, you know, believe in the idea. He was like, no, you just get developers, you sell them to projects, you hire more sales guys, and on we go. But he gave me the freedom, you know, to try this media thing, this marketing thing, and let's say it's worked out really, really well. But yeah, so I just ran the numbers. Okay, if we hire another person who doesn't bill or anything, can we survive? Okay, we can. Okay, so what's the profit margin from that? Okay, we're still like doing 20, 25 net profits. That's a huge number, you know, and that's just how I calculate it. Like, for example, now we're holding out one or two developers, you know, to close a bigger client. Of course, he's not billing for a while, and that hurts the financials in short term. But okay, once again, I watch my numbers. I'm like, okay, if they don't bill for a while, it's not a problem. And even if the persons who are now billing billed only 80% or 70%, we would still be making profit. So if you check it from that sense, it's like, it's not a risk at all. It's a shot worth taking, because I know if the going gets tough, I can sell them to other projects, or we can get other projects, you know. But this is just, you know, like, okay, we might have a chance with this one client. If we get in there, it's going to be huge for us, you know. So we take the risk. And if it doesn't pan out, no worries. We learned quite a lot. We know what to do when the next time this kind of a client comes, and we know what to do, you know, better next time. And we're still making profit. We're still paying salaries. We're still, you know, raising people's salaries and whatnot. So I think it's quite simple. But yeah, I watch the numbers. If they work out, it's okay. Like, of course, like, I value, you know, good feelings, and I always say that at the beginning of the company, the kumbaya feeling is the most important thing. Like, everybody feels that there's a good kumbaya feeling in the company. But underneath all of that, I'm still quite, like I said, I'm capitalistic and communistic at the same time, and socialist at the same time. I'm really heavily into sales. I sell a lot. I watch the numbers every day. I watch every day, how much money do we have? How much longer do we have, you know, our runway? Are the people billings, what their billing rates are, you know, and whatnot. So in a sense, I'm like really strict, but not strict at the same time. You know, it's a bit nuanced, you could say.
Mm. And is there any, sorry.
Yeah, it's pulling from like two extremes. Mm. And you know, and I think that's what makes entrepreneurship quite hard. Like you tell people, you know, like you have to be really, really kumbaya, and at the same time, you have to be really, really tough. Okay, how do you do that? Well, that's why it's hard.
Now, for those that might not quite understand, what do you mean by like a kumbaya spirit or kumbaya attitude?
Yeah, kumbaya is like everybody's feeling good, you know, chill vibes. Everybody's having, you know, it's having a good feeling, you know, That's what I mean by kumbaya. Like everybody's holding their hands, everybody's hugging each other. Of course, not now because it's COVID and whatnot. But you know, having a good feeling, you know, about things like, you know, that's, I would just, you know, condensate into that. Like it's a good feeling. Like everybody's feeling good, everybody's happy. You know, that's what I mean by kumbaya. Like another kind of like, you know, hippie stuff. Like hippies are always happy and whatnot. If you take the stereotypical view of hippies, you know, they're like, they're chill, they're happy, they're enjoying life. That's what I mean by kumbaya. But of course, when you're a company, you still have to hit certain numbers, you have to have sales, you have to have marketing, etc. So that's what I mean. And like I said, that's pulling from two opposite directions. If that makes any sense. I hope it makes.
Now you mentioned a bit again about the watching too many motivational videos.
Yeah.
So to touch on that a bit, was there anyone that stands out, or more broadly, like role models? Is there one you've mentioned a particular marketer a few times? Yeah. I think. But
yeah, I've had them quite. I mean, at some point I listened to more people. You know, at some people, and at other times other people. I think I first started out with Tai Lopez, like I said. People have quite a lot of opinions about that person, but I've actually met him like in person, and he's a really, really genuine and a good guy. And I learned a lot from him about running a business, about marketing, and you know, about covering your own ass, so to say, you know, when it comes to business. So that's how I got started. But then I got more into sales, because I had a sales job at Vardin. So that's when I came across Grant Cardone. He's a personality himself as well. He has quite a lot of controversy around him, but I think my strength is like that. I see the you know, the good sides of this. Like, of course, I understand people's criticisms of them. I'm not completely dumb. I see what they're doing. You know, I know they're marketing their stuff. But I took the best of them. But the most genuine person, I think, is Gary Vaynerchuk by a long shot. And that's why I've been vibing with his content. I vibed a lot with Tai Lopez's and Grant Cardone's content. And there's some other as well, like Traffic and Funnels and whatnot. But yeah, I've learned from them so much. And I continue to hold them in high respect. And of course, I pay for, you know, coaching and consulting and programs still. So it's just, you know, continuous learning.
It seems like there's like quite a heavy focus, it seems, on sort of making sure you've learned, making sure you know what's happening, and making sure you know sort of is there any particular reason that you sort of really focus on being informed before making?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just, you know, comes natural. I just follow these guys and they say, hey, you should do XYZ. I'm like, maybe I should try out XYZ. Okay, it worked. Let's try it again. And it works, you know? Like every teaching by Tai Lopez, by Grant Cardone, by Gary, everything works. I've bought their programs, the less expensive ones, the more expensive ones, everything just works. And to be honest, I didn't have any other people to look up to, you know, when it comes to entrepreneurship, when it comes to leadership. So I gravitated towards them naturally. They were like my mentors, in parentheses again, you know, that I could learn from. Like I didn't have any role models other than them, you know, when it comes to leadership, to sales, to motivation and whatnot. So I just naturally gravitated to that direction.
Well, it seems to have worked.
Yeah, true.
I think I've asked everything I can think of, but I'm happy to carry on a conversation. Happy to talk more. Anything else you want to cover?
Well, I think we covered quite a lot of things here, actually.
Yeah.
And I hope, I mean, I don't, when I worked at Vardin, I spoke more English because the environment was, you know, everybody spoke English between each other. Now I don't speak English that much. So at some point, you know, I'm looking for words. So I hope the audience can understand.
Excellent. I was thinking genuinely earlier, I was genuinely quite impressed with how good your English is. To be fair, I'm quite impressed with everybody in Finland and how good their English is.
Yeah, we watched a lot of Hollywood things.
I had a friend over in Norway, and she obviously also speaks very good English. It's sort of like, we get English channels too, and you've got really good TV, so it was only one option, really.
True. And I mean, English is a good language, you know, globally to know. So I think it's just normal. And I do listen to quite a lot of podcasts in English, and I read literature in English as well quite a lot. So I think that all contributes to it. But of course, when you don't talk English that much, you know, and you have to do it between bigger breaks, and you know,
that would lead me on to one thing, which is more of a analysis of what we've been talking about, but quite clearly to me, at least, it seems like that self-education, learning, are sort of the fundamentals that you've used in particular.
Yeah.
In whatever, to learn to be a leader, to learn how to do marketing, to learn social media, to learn how to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
There's a lot more of to use a word which I think might be a bit confusing, some deference towards other people, sort of deferring, sort of like you're aware that you might not know how to be a leader, so then you're looking, how do I be a leader, how do I do that.
And that's actually a really good point. We can touch that real quick. Like I don't consider myself you know, a smart person or anything. I'm just pretty much these mentors that I talked about, they say things, I do what they say, and then, you know, stuff works out. Of course, I have my own insights and my own ideas and everything, but I don't consider myself smart at any stage, to be honest. It feels, sometimes I feel like I'm just, you know, copying what they're doing and it's working. I'm like, why is this working so well? Like, this is not that hard, you know? Like, if you just listen to them, you do what they say. Like, even if you do like 30% of what they do, you're still going to get like great results. And I feel like that. I don't feel like an imposter per se, but it's like, hey, you know, Gary says that you should focus on marketing by hiring these persons and doing these kinds of things. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that sounds pretty good. And then I'm going to go and do it. And then it works. And I'm like, and then people are like, oh my God, Jonas, you're so smart. I'm like, yeah, sure.
So just out of, again, curiosity, would you say, are there any points or things you've learned which are sort of things that they don't mention, things that you've would, or things that you said, actually, I'm going to do that, but slightly differently?
To be honest, no. Or perhaps some small things, but I would say in a grand scheme of things, that like, no. Like everything I've learned, you know, the macro learnings, I like to say macro and micro. By macro, I mean, you know, the general, the headline stuff I learned from them. But then when it comes to, you know, certain specific situations in my own company, of course, I make my own decisions based on the context, I mean, and based on the information I have. Like, they can't teach you that in their own videos, you know, in their own propaganda videos.
Well, then, fair enough. I think that's all. And yeah,
that's nice.
We're good. Perfect. We're good to go.
No, thank you, man. It was perfect.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Sorry for my random tangents.
No worries. I think that's what makes this good, you know.
Well, all that's left to do is say thank you, and I look forward to hearing more of what happens and what you end up doing next.
Yeah, let's see where we're gonna be in couple of years.
Maybe you end up start giving your own entrepreneurial advice to people.
Yeah.
In 5 years,
perhaps. I mean, that's been actually a huge talking point. Like, people are like, hey, you should give some tips to people. I'm like, I don't feel like, you know, I don't, I'm 28 years old, I'm still quite young. Like, I don't feel like I should be this guru or anything. But then again, I just tell what works for me, and you know, I hope it works for other people. Like, I have in that sense, I do have imposter syndrome. Like, okay, I'm 28 years old. I don't feel like I should be giving out business advice to people.
I think I will admit it's very understandable when I think a lot of big sort of advertisement marketing, entrepreneurial influencers are always like, this will work. This is
exactly.
This is this. Whereas understandably, You don't have that. I don't know if it's overconfidence or however you want to say it, but
yeah.
Realism perhaps as well.
Yeah, true. And I can't explain it. Like, that's just, you know, how I work. And I think that's the, you know, being humble. I think that's one thing that actually, well, Gary Vaynerchuk himself teaches, like just be humble, like be empathetic to people. And I think that works out. And I think, you know, maybe because, sorry, we were supposed to stop, but we know this conversation.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Because I've seen my fair share of people, you know, who are trying to get this guru status. And then when you watch their financials or anything like the financials in Finland, you can see them, you know, how much the company is doing if they have a certain company model. And they're like barely making ends meet, or they're not making that much money. Of course, that's just one side of things. Of course, money is one side, but you know, you can get quite a general, you know, picture. So I think my worst fear is that I give that kind of advice, and when somebody watches, sees what kind of results I have, is like, no, that dude is just full of BS. I don't want to portray myself like that. So I think I'm just hedging, you know, I'm just hedging by saying like, hey, I'm not a big deal. Like, no worries. This is just, you know, what worked for me.
I mean, it would certainly be a niche in terms of sort of marketing, entrepreneur, influencers. True. To be like, you know what? It might not work.
Yeah.
I'll be honest. It's worked for me. I'll be honest. Yeah. Might not for you.
But ironically, you know, when people talk about like Grant Cardone or Ty Lobos or Gary, they say the exact same thing. They're like, hey, this might work. Or if you put your, you know, if you put quite a lot of hours into it, this will work. But it's not going to work for everybody because A, not everybody is meant out to be or cut out to be an entrepreneur or a business owner or whatever. So in a sense, I think those big figures, they are really, really humble in their own rights, you know. But that's just my definition probably of things, you know. That's, you know, it gets into a whole another story, you know. That's my context, how I take it.
Mm. I was going to say, there's a few different ways, I think, to calibrate how humble somebody is.
True.
And it's always true. Generally by how humble you are. So
yeah,
if you think they're humble, then I definitely believe you.
Yeah. Okay, this is the last thing, I promise. So for example, like I don't feel comfortable giving advice to a business owner who does 5 or 10 million, you know, dollars or euros a year in revenue, when myself I am making a bit over a million. I don't see, like, of course I can give him some advice, but I don't think I'm qualified enough to give the advice, since the other person is much, much farther away than I am. I think that's like where my ideology comes from.
Mm. Yeah, fair enough. I think that makes a lot of sense. You can obviously always have some great insights, but
of course, yeah.
Also, I think at a certain point, if you try and offer somebody who's turning over 5 times more than you, they probably will be a bit reluctant to listen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Understandably. Well,
true.
But anyway, I'm sure the conversation will probably start up again, but
yeah.
Lovely to have you.
Yeah, thanks once again. It was a pleasure.
Iso kiitos, että kuuntelit jakson loppuun asti. Hei, muistakaa käydä tilaamasta meidän podcastin, saatte aina ensimmäisenä tietää ja kuulla, milloin uusi jakso on julkaistu ja pistetty niin sanotusti tulille. Ei muuta, kiitos, moro!